Hi, you are listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies brought to you with the support of the School of Business, Management, and Economics at the University of Sussex in the UK. This is a summary of episode 34. My name is Tom, and I am broadcasting from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States. This episode is the second in season 4, in which we go back to explore canonic and older texts in management and organization theory. The text of this episode is entitled Some Social and Psychological Consequences of the Longwall Method of Coal Getting. It was published in the journal Human Relations in 1951 and written by Eric Trist and Ken Bamforth. Eric Trist was a British social scientist best known for his contributions to the field of organizational development. He wrote this paper together with Ken Bamforth, an ex-miner and industrial fellow of the Tavistock Institute, to which Eric Trist was also affiliated. The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, based in London and celebrating this year its 70th anniversary, has been very important in the development of organization and management scholarship. It is associated to a number of studies, which, similar to the ones carried out by the Human Relations School, has contributed to our understanding of social dynamics in the workplace. You can hear more about the Human Relations School in episodes 9 and 33. Concepts such as socio-technical systems, the action research approach, and a use of social and psychological theories to understand work dynamics are hallmarks of this institute. In the paper, Trist and Bamforth discuss a change in the way mining was organized, from a traditional hand-got system, in which miners worked in small, considerably independent teams, to one known as longwall, which is much more mechanized, formalized, and characterized by a larger scale of operations. While the hand-got method encouraged strong social bonds, with workers toiling closely together and performing all tasks as an autonomous unit, under the longwall method, workers were spread out over long distances and operated in shifts such that no one team or person had visibility of the entire task. Despite the increased efficiency, the loss of the social bonds produced morale problems, internal fighting and blaming, and increased worker resistance. In a way, the longwall method bears strong connections to a Tayloristic system typical of factories in such age. Thus, the paper can be interpreted as an effort to tease out the consequences of a Tayloristic approach in the mining industry. You can hear more about our views of Taylorism in Episode 1. The explanation of the differences between the hand-got and mechanized longwall is visually stunning, as the article provides a thick description of the setting, the work performed, and the relationships among miners. Among others, the paper touches in a number of research streams in our field: change, resistance, technology, group cohesion, etc. It lives up to a classic status and shows a more phenomena-driven approach, while most papers published today usually deal with specific puzzles. In our discussion, we wondered that although the authors explore the longwall method as a mechanization process, it could also be considered a bureaucratization one. That is, on one hand, we have the arrival of machines, which make possible the scale of the operation. Yet at the same time, we have the arrival of specialization, procedures, and hierarchy. That is, workers become divided into specific groups linked to specific tasks. Their work is expected to abide to well-defined procedures, and layers of hierarchy are instituted. We then talked about the extent bureaucracy matches well with the mining context, and noted that the paper has an interesting connection with the work of Alvin Guldner, which studied mining companies around the same period. Guldner, an industrial sociologist, carried out a seminal study in the bureaucratization of a gypsum mine in the U.S. He showed while operations in the factory parts of the mine were formalized, the face of the mine maintained a more craft arrangement. He theorizes that the mining context is too specific, hard to standardize or bureaucratize. Thus, one might argue that the longwall method is set to fail as it does not fit the nature of the activity. We tried to problematize such assumptions and discussed whether there can be different kinds of bureaucratization which may suit such context. On the theme of change, we discussed how much the dynamics documented in the arrival of the longwall method seem to have reflections on issues related to the arrival of open office layouts in modern corporations. Studies have shown that while the exposed motive for an open office layout is productivity, Such structures often have the opposite effect, especially in the case of thought work, work that involves concentrating for long periods of time. Nevertheless, the trend continues. Thus, one might say that the open office suffers from the issues as the Longwell change did, since both had possibly good intentions which proved untrue. We then discussed that the case of the open office illustrates a case of change in which there might be hidden motives underpinning it. In the case of the open office, critical scholars have discussed how it is associated to a desire for further control by management, not just helping productivity. Using ideas related to Foucault, scholars have theorized how the open office served disciplinary purposes. We also considered how change creates sometimes a double bind. For example, open offices were or are said to foster social relations, liberate people from the cubicle, and support collaboration. Yet it did not go as planned. The question becomes thus: if you undo it, you go back for the old social malaise. Is it really worth it? Another aspect we considered in thinking about change was the role of resistance. In the paper by Tristan Bamforth, we have a lot of issues undermining the system. Competition, as in people fighting for specific places, as some places are easier to mine than others. Absenteeism, and so on. Interestingly, recently in the news, we have seen a boycott by Apple engineers to the new worksite, which has an open office arrangement. Tracing a parallel, we might imagine that the same way Apple engineers might want to preserve their autonomy and sense of craft by avoiding a change in their work system, workers in the mine had their craft spirit hurt with the arrival of the Longwell method. In continuing to discuss the text, we wondered how come the problems linked to the Longwell method took such larger proportions, absenteeism, low morale, and so on. Trying to put ourselves in the shoes of managers at the time, we imagined that they were simply not aware of these consequences before the implementation of such a method. In particular, the ideas of scientific management, which were prevalent at the time, posed management as an activity focused on the control of workers and tasks without paying much attention to relations and interdependencies. As we have discussed in other episodes, the notion that you can organize work as if relations and interdependencies did not matter has proven misguided. For example, see episode 33 on the consequences of a Taylorism and the importance of paying attention to social relations at work. We know today, thanks to the work of people like Tristan Bamforth, that if people do not know each other, respect each other, it gets tricky, and a similar change may produce a number of unintended consequences. We reflected on how much this inability to foresee consequences of change is still common today. Frequently, managers find themselves having to push for changes which they have limited understanding of. Or worse, in some situations, as in some form of government work, newly appointed managers and leaders are expected to produce some tangible change and launch new programs without a solid understanding of current activities of a given organization, which frequently leads to mixed results. And while we might expect the intermediate layers to be the ones smoothing the process as they can translate strategic change into the tactical environment, the day-to-day work and the workers, they are the ones usually under the most pressure to and often seem to be the most expendable. In discussing the negative consequences of the Longwell method, we considered its negative impact on the social cohesion in the mine. This is particularly unfortunate as social cohesion, a strong social fabric, is rather important in such a context. We analyzed how the lack of social cohesion might generate feelings of distress, as the one documented in the arrival of the new method, and talked about the importance of coming together and building social relations in the workplace in general. In the case of mining specifically, I shared my experiences visiting a salt mine in Poland. You can also see this as a blog post on our website, in which workers produced intricate sculptures using their skills in the galleries. This testifies to the creative ways in which workers faced a Tayloristic organization and tried to counter boredom. You can also see this in episode 13 on Banana Time. It shows an effort to build a sense of community by engaging in these extracurricular activities. Thinking about parallels with contemporary work, we considered attempts to build social fabric in the workplaces today, in which, like mining, workers go about their activities in an isolated manner. For example, academic work is a very individualized activity And it's perhaps no wonder that university departments organize coffee times to produce moments in which everyone can come together and build ties. The case of minors also shows the link between isolation in the workplace and distress. Again, this resonates today. There have been current discussions about the hidden costs of the sharing, which linked to working in isolation and being managed by impersonal algorithms. An article published recently in the Financial Times, which is available on our website, shows that ex-taxi drivers say that when they started driving as Ubers, they experienced a number of health and psychological issues given by the isolation of the work before they would interact in downtime situations with other taxi drivers. In discussing the problems of the Longwall method and its impact on social cohesion, we considered that there seems to be no integration mechanisms to counterbalance the differentiation in tasks and sense of isolation created by the departure from the hand-got system. Thus, in light of what we know today, we tried to think of mechanisms that can promote integration and a sense of community at work. We discussed that some industries are easier than others to generate common direction or team spirit, or esprit de corps. For example, in aircraft manufacturers and similar manufacturing companies, workers can see the result of their labor. This gives a sense of direction. Extractive industries are different. You can see cars of coal loaded on a train, but it's a bit more abstract. So you may need another process or symbol or a story to provide a sense of cohesion, such as making workers aware of the different tasks involved in the process. We then talked about some specific mechanisms for integration. For example, as described in the article, the pay systems seem to be hugely differentiated with distinct systems of compensation for different workers, even within the same shift. We might imagine that this contributes to the disintegration and the competitive ethos. We consider that today we have similar situations. There are many differences in pay scales based on factors which go into negotiating contracts. The solutions that some companies try to employ today could potentially also have contributed to create a sense of cohesion in the mining context described in the article. We thought of examples providing bonuses for people in the same team or department, or related to a common goal or non-monetary compensation, such as recognition of someone's role in the system, like Employee of the Month. We also spoke of whether responsible autonomy could be considered an integration mechanism, and generally a way to nurture social cohesion. Responsible autonomy is linked to greater ownership over tasks and a form of empowerment. This led some podcasters to think about links with the military and the limits of autonomy. The military have indeed a philosophy of centralized planning and decentralized execution. Yet you need a check that the overall direction of the organization is respected locally. You do not want autonomous teams going far from the goals of the organization, after all. In complex situations, we suspect that autonomy can mean losing focus and cohesion. This generated an interesting discussion as we discussed what kind of autonomy may be relevant in different situations. Some challenge the assumption that once you have autonomy, groups are not able to understand the overall goal or get hooked into local sub-goals, losing sight of the overall big picture. But could you do it the other way around? People in the trenches might have the most updated information and be best able to act accordingly. This leads to a recent paper by Beth Betschke and Dalis Chung in Administrative Sciences Quarterly on film crews and manufacturing occupational groups. Again, this is available on the website. They found that many times the local occupational groups strive to prioritize organizational goals. For example, studios leave the crews quite free and check with them regarding the budget and schedules. If you have a community of specialists with enough information on the work process, they understand the goals and might be the ones best capable to decide how to follow them. In closing, we discussed that a particularly noticeable lesson from the paper was that while today a traditionally bureaucratic way for organizing is common, from healthcare to universities, different countermeasures have been developed to foster relations and avoid the problems created by loss of cohesion and isolation as generated by the arrival of the Longwall method. That is, we got better at dealing with mechanization, bureaucratization, and scientific management. Yet it is interesting to consider how much can go wrong if such countermeasures are not in place. And that is all for episode 34 on Some Social and Psychological Consequences of the Longwall Method of Coal Getting by Eric Trist and Ken Bamforth. We would be glad to hear from you via social media or email about your impressions of the summary and the podcast in general. Also remember that we now have a newsletter to which you can subscribe on our webpage. In the next episode, we will discuss the famous book by Arlie Hochschild, The Managed Heart, which introduces the notion of emotional labor. Thank you for listening.